It's Brittany, bitch. And I am back.
Ayo, we back in this bitch. Hunter and Andrew.
Also, rip The Office.
Yeah, fucking Netflix.
God, I'm actually really mad about that, because I was one of those people that put The Office on all the time, you know, yeah, like in the background.
Right.
Even when I'm trying to sleep, I just turn The Office on, and now I'm on. Now what am I watching when I go to sleep?
Parks and Rec, hopefully.
No, I've never seen it.
What?
Breaking Bad. I'm like through my fourth time through of Breaking Bad again.
Have you seen Better Call Saul yet?
Yes, I love Better Call Saul.
Dude, so much better than Breaking Bad. And Breaking Bad's already fucking great.
Bob Odenkirk is awesome.
Oof. All right, so we're back to the Dark Things podcast. We just want to give you a special little prelude to this episode so we can kind of announce what's going on. Hunter and I have been off of this for like, what, 4 months now? Maybe five?
Since October, yeah. And it's now January. Yeah.
So a couple months. A little bit longer than we expected. I think we were anticipating coming back by December. But I mean, I don't know about Hunter, but I'll just speak about me in the last couple months. So as a teacher, this time of year gets super fucking stressful. Like, usually, I mean, around where we quit, I mean, my life started getting a lot busier. So I told Hunter, I was like, dude, I'm going to have to take a step back on this. Like, I don't have time. So yeah, it's kind of ironic. I mean, I have even less time than I did before, but I mean, we're just going to make this podcast thing be consistent and help it be consistent. This is my first time recording through the school year. So just naturally, it's tough. Yeah, last 3 months, I don't know, been getting tatted up.
Almost. Is it hard being a babysitter for 30 kids?
Oh, dude, so bad.
Especially, what grade do you teach again?
Sixth grade.
Oh, that's the worst.
Dude, yeah. Where they laugh at penis every time they hear it.
And half of them don't know what deodorant is.
Nope.
And like half of them are going through puberty and the other half aren't.
Exactly, dude.
That's plus, such an awkward age.
Plus in COVID, like this whole situation is just a wash. Like, and it's
nobody,
so bad.
Speaking of wash, I'll bet nobody washes their masks either.
Dude, no. Like the worst thing is like I work with low economic families, and so like obviously like they're, it's hard for them to do that as is, but like they'll legit have one mask and they'll wear it the entire school year, and like they'll eventually like pop into class, they'll be like, hey, can I go to the office to get a new one, like this shit stinks, and I'm like, yeah, go get a new one for sure.
That's pretty bad when they realize it stinks too.
Oh yeah, I'm like, yeah, like, thank you for being self-aware. Yeah, let's get you to the right fucking office and get you a new one.
Here's five masks. Just kidding. Yeah, you've got some new ink, I see. That's pretty cool. What have I been up to? Really, not a whole lot. Have my job still. That's good. Still working at the airport.
Hell yeah.
So, yeah, haven't lost it yet. But still just going to school, graduating this April, so it should be good. But yeah, we had to take a little break just because things were going a little crazy, even with COVID and stuff going on. We just decided it'd be best to stop, you know, meeting up and focus on other things for a little bit. But we're glad to be back. And we are going to continue now. Our plan is to release every Sunday, and we have a really good episode for you guys for this Sunday, the Green River Killer. So we're going to hop right into that. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Dark Things podcast. This is episode 8. Today, we are discussing the Green River Killer, or as he's known as, Gary Ridgway. Isn't that an intimidating name, Gary?
Dude, no. That's the guy that I usually think about that's like creepy, like has nothing going on in life, you know?
Well, this is that guy.
Yeah. Dude, I'd rather call him the Green River Killer, dude. Okay. Just knowing him as Gary, I'm like, fuck. The snail from SpongeBob, yeah. You know?
Gary!
Yeah. Gary!
Exactly. So, the crazy thing about Gary Ridgway, the Green River Killer, he's one of the most prolific serial killers in American history. He's really not one that gets a lot of attention, to be honest with you. Like, when you think, I don't know about you, but like, when you think about serial killers, you think of like Ted Bundy, BTK, yeah, all that. This guy has the second highest body count in American history.
Dude, yeah, that's crazy to think about.
He was only one shy of topping the list.
Who's at the very top?
His name's Samuel Little. Yeah. But I'm Samuel Little, we'll talk about Samuel Little in another episode. But okay. Anyways, so his body count, like I said, makes him one of the most successful serial killers in American history. He had over 49 convicted killings, and he's truly a legendary American monster. Samuel Little, like I said, he had 50 convicted killings,
he was just one short, so sorry, Gary. You missed it by one.
Should have done a better job.
Sorry, Gary in SpongeBob voice. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, so who is Gary Ridgway? And going into his early life, Gary Leon, crazy middle name.
Oh, this just keeps getting better.
So he was born on February 18th, 1949 in Salt Lake City, Utah.
Heyo.
Dude, fuck, what is with us and like having all the serial killers born here, dude?
Yeah, so Andrew and I are actually like, this podcast is based in Salt Lake City.
Yeah.
Which is kind of funny because this crazy guy was from here and so was Ted Bundy.
Yeah. Do we?
And you know, Ted Bundy, we're actually going to talk about Ted Bundy because this story intertwines with Ted Bundy.
Hey, let's go. Near the end. All the Utah drama coming in one episode right here. Okay. So yeah, Thomas Ridgway. Hold up. Okay, one of Thomas Ridgway's three sons, his home life was troubled. Relatives have described his mother as domineering and have said that while young, he witnessed more than one violent argument between his parents. His father was a bus driver who would often complain about the presence of sex workers. Ridgway had a bedwetting problem until he was 13, and his mother would wash his genitals after every episode.
Yeah. So, God. I just want to point out, like, he's already checking so many boxes to become a serial killer.
Yeah.
Like, he's grown up in an abusive home. The mom's freaking crazy.
Cleaning his genitals
every
time.
He's bedwetting, and she's fondling him after he wets the bed. Like,
up until
hell?
He was 13, too. So, like, that's him getting into puberty.
Yeah.
So, like, by that time, he's basically popping full-on, you know, tents, and she's still fondling
him. He's getting hair down there, probably.
Yeah, that, too. And he's growing. So,
and she's straight up like, oh, we gotta wash off your dick, you know, like she's grabbing it and washing it.
Oh god, dude,
and the guy's 13 years old.
And I'm like, why can't he do that himself, you know? I don't know. That's so gross to think about
already, you know. This guy's gonna turn into a serial killer.
Yeah,
that's the one thing that's you know, there's this thing called the McDonald triad, and the three things you look for in a serial killer in their youth is bedwetting, obviously being number one.
Okay.
Second one is animal torture.
Yeah.
If somebody's torturing animals, that's a very good indication that they're going to be a murderer in the future.
Damn.
And the third is pyrotechnics. So like anybody that starts shit on fire as a kid could have a high potential of being violent as which I wish there was more research on it, because it would be so cool to kind of do like a huge analysis of all these serial killers, and I guarantee you they have one or two things in common.
That's true. Okay, so I'm gonna like knock that list just a little bit, because I think that list is accurate. Oh man, my mic is super quiet.
Yeah. Is mine okay?
Yeah, yours is okay. Is that better? Not really, kind of. Okay.
I can still hear you, yeah.
Okay, so the one thing I do... Yeah, it's way better. Okay. The one thing I do want to say about that list is, like, I agree with everything that's on there. Like, I'm not, like, going to fully knock it, but I feel like there's better indicators if someone's going to be a serial killer. Because I think abuse of any kind is, like, a really good indicator. And then on top of that, like, most of it has to do with the relationships with your parents. So, like, with guys, like, the way they view their mothers, or, like, the way girls treat them, or they treat girls. Like, I feel like those would be better indicators, no?
I would agree. And we're not saying, obviously, anybody that grew up in an abusive home is going to turn out to be a serial killer.
Yeah, definitely not. Yeah.
That's because, you know, there are a lot of people that have grown up in abusive homes. There's a lot of people that have grown up bedwetting. The uncommon thing is bedwetting when you're 13 years old.
That's true. Yeah, most people finish that.
And I think this was, like, on a daily basis he would do this, too.
Okay.
And his mom would scrub him down on a daily basis.
So, okay.
And scrub a particular region.
Let
very,
me ask
very thoroughly.
So gross. Okay, I want to ask you questions about this because I don't know. It's called the McDonald theory.
The McDonald triad.
Triad. Okay, so I'm a little bit curious about it because, I mean, almost every guy or like guy friend I've had like has had a bedwetting problem, but I mean usually that like lasts until maybe what, like 8 or 10.
I would say so. Yeah, I mean, unless you actually have like an actual medical problem with your bladder.
Yeah.
I would say that, but he has multiple things that go on with him.
Right.
It's not just the bedwetting.
No, but like the one thing I just want to know about this model though is like, is there a differentiation with that between that happening or is it like after a certain age? And then also like, because this is where I'm kind of curious, because I feel like most guys have those three things. Because a lot of guys are into like fireworks like when they're kids, because it's fascinating, right? It's like fire. But that shortly ends after you like get older. Cause like for me, like when I first saw fireworks as a kid, like, I thought that was the coolest thing ever. When your parents let you light the fireworks, I was, like, super fascinated by it, right?
But
that doesn't last.
The main
after.
Thing is the purpose of setting a fire. So if you're purposely trying to destroy something.
Okay, got you. So that's
because,
where it goes.
Yeah, if you're a normal kid, I loved lighting stuff on fire. I would even, like, go to an anthill and pour gas on it and light that on fire.
Right, okay, yeah.
It's probably why I have a dark mind sometimes. That's why we started this podcast. Just kidding. Yeah.
Okay.
I did not kill that girl.
I did not hit her.
I did not have sex with that woman.
Did not have sexual relations.
I don't care what Hillary says.
Okay, anyways. So then I want to get to this third thing then. Because here's the interesting thing. I feel like that triad is like a normal like experimentation like when it comes to like childhood as a male. Not necessarily female, just as a male. But I do feel like there's a differentiation where it goes from normal fascination into like obsession, because also with that animal abuse thing, like I'm pretty sure every guy's tried to like light an ant on fire using a magnifying glass. Like you hear about it once, you're like, oh, I wonder if that actually works. You try it, but like, where is the line on that? Like, is that ever talked about in your CG classes or anything?
Just the extremism, and obviously, like, it's not gonna be a solve all case scenario. I would say there's a couple serial killers that have never had any of these indications. Ted Bundy.
Really?
Ted Bundy was a really smart guy. He never showed any indication that I know of off the top of my head of becoming a serial killer when he was older.
Okay.
He's kind of a rare case, I feel. But the majority of serial killers have something. Like, let's talk about a couple that we've talked about in the past. Ed Gein, for example.
Oh, my God, yeah.
His mother was extremely abusive, emotionally abusive, probably sexually abusive, don't you think?
Yeah, definitely.
Also,
for those that haven't seen that episode, that's season 1, episode 10.
Ed Gein, yes. Give that one a listen as well. What other killers have we talked about? It's very common for serial killers to have this kind of a backstory.
Right.
You know, that's why, and I'm not saying it's a... Oh, yeah, he sets fires, he tortures kittens, he pees the bed. He's going to be a serial killer. He has a very high chance of becoming a serial killer.
But not guaranteed.
But it's not guaranteed.
So on top of that, and I know there's parallels to Ted Bundy, so I feel kind of okay going on this side tangent, and I apologize for kind of like going off the rail a little bit. Because for me, and probably other listeners too, I didn't know what this triad is that McDonald has. But the one thing I am curious about is Ted Bundy, I believe, when he was being convicted and on, you know, in court, he did say that the reason he did those killings was because of pornography. And I don't know if he was telling the truth or if he was using that as an excuse. But like during those court trials, he did say that he, you know, did that because of pornography. And I do know that a lot of Mormons, because we were based in Utah and Ted Bundy was also in here, and also almost converted to Mormonism. But like Mormons will also use that as like fire back on pornography. They're like, that's why you shouldn't do it, because it will lead you to dark things. You know?
The thing is, 95% of men in the world view pornography.
Yeah.
And that doesn't mean they're out murdering people. I would say pornography in itself, obviously, there are very dark characteristics to it. Human trafficking.
Yeah, definitely.
Talking about pornography, it's not a good thing. Do I think that viewing pornography is going to turn you into a killer? No. Do I think that viewing a certain type of pornography would turn you into that? Yes.
Okay.
Because the thing is, with escalation, like, let's say Ted Bundy's watching, like, a domination, you know, pornography type things, bondage, stuff like that. That really gets those people going.
True.
And then that's only going to satisfy these type of people for a little bit longer until they eventually have to recreate that specific, you know, bondage or kidnapping or murder in themselves. They have to recreate like a snuff film, basically,
okay,
in order to satisfy their needs. So, yes, I would say that it could lead to murder and serial killing, like Ted Bundy says.
Yeah.
We also have to consider Ted Bundy's what? He was big in what, the 80s?
Probably. I don't know for sure, but that sounds about right. Yeah.
I'm going to look it up real quick because really, what was porn in the 80s? Yeah. 1973 through 1978.
That's true. That was basically magazines.
Like, yeah, I mean, it's pictures. There's no internet around back then. The 70s were a huge time for serial killers. That's when you had a ton of serial killers on the loose.
Yeah.
Even Gary Ridgway, too.
Oh, for sure.
In the 70s and 80s. So continuing on with that.
Yeah.
Unless you had anything else you wanted to talk about with the McDonald triad.
No. Do you want me to finish this up real quick?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, so where did I stop? Okay. He would later tell defense psychologists that as an adolescent, he had conflicting feelings of anger and sexual attraction toward his mother and fantasized about killing her, Ed Gein, cough, cough. When he was 16, he stabbed a six-year-old boy who survived the... Jesus Christ. Okay, he survived the attack. Ridgway had led the boy into the woods and then stabbed him through the ribs into his liver. Ridgway's IQ was recorded as being in the low 80s. He had lower than average intelligence.
So there's something also that's a little bit different. Most serial killers who fall under this kind of stereotypical thing generally have average to higher intelligence.
Okay.
Most serial killers do. Gary Ridgway, it's crazy because for being such a prolific serial killer and having such a high body count, you would think that this guy's like a genius, you know?
Yeah.
To go this long without getting caught by authorities.
For sure. That's interesting.
And having such a high body count. That's also, of course, due to the types of people he killed. You were talking a little bit about sex workers, how his father hated them.
Yeah.
And was constantly talking bad about them. You know, okay, I'm just going to come out and say this right now. A lot of the times when people talk shit about, let's say, for example, gay people, right? Yeah. You have people out there, guys, who are extremely homophobic. They themselves are actually the biggest gay person out there.
Exactly.
So the fact, and I'm just saying that from experience, right? I've personally seen that attacks against gay people, and the most people who are homophobic are actually gay themselves.
Yasvinsky.
Got it at that part. You might listen to this shit.
I don't care. Hey, Yasvinsky, I hope you're listening to this.
Just kidding.
We know you're gay. Just come on.
Hey, so, so the fact that his father is always talking about sex workers. The dude was probably addicted to sex workers because that's all that's
dude,
on his mind.
For real, huh?
Yes.
Fuck.
Because like, if you absolutely hate a population of people like that, and we're going to see this in Gary Ridgway, you're going to be obsessed with them to the point that you're engaging with them.
Yeah.
It's the same thing with people who are homophobic. You know, they're so anti-gay that they're using that as an excuse to hide their own gayness.
Dude, it's so true though.
It's true. Boy, kid. I'm just kidding.
Thomas S. Monson.
Oh, shoot.
Okay, real quick before we move on to the adult stuff. I did see, and we just read through this, but he had intense conflicting feelings of anger and sexual attraction toward his mother. Yeah.
Do I kill her?
Do I kill her? Do I fuck her? I don't know. I don't know. I can't do it.
Well, I mean, the thing that's really messed him up as a kid, and we're going to blame the mom 100% for this, is the mom was obviously his first sexual experience as a kid.
Yeah.
The fact that his mom fondled him like that all the time, maybe he was purposely wetting the bed.
Oh, shit. Yeah.
So his mom would do that. I don't know. That's speculation. That's total speculation.
True.
All I'm saying is that this was literally probably his first sexual encounter was his mom cleaning him off, you know? But... Yeah, so he had kind of a very troubled youth, I would say. Very,
definitely.
Very troubled. His adult life, though, after he graduated high school, he joined the military, was sent to Vietnam, where he saw combat. During his time in the military, Ridgway had frequent sexual intercourse with sex workers and contracted gonorrhea. Although angered by this, he continued this activity without protection.
Oh, well, that's why. He's an idiot.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think another thing he's talking about in this is he was trying to get back at sex workers by purposely giving them gonorrhea.
Dude, okay, that's fucked. Dude, fuck this guy, bro.
He was purposely trying to give them gonorrhea.
Dude, that's why it's so rampant in the U.S. today, dude. Fuck this Ridgway
guy. Gary Ridgway, yeah, giving it all of them. So, yeah, he was angry at sex workers. Like, he had a lot of conflicted feelings about sex workers, too. And we'll see how that is really bad in just a minute. But, so while Ridgway was abroad and in Vietnam, his wife had an extramarital affair, and he got really upset, and their marriage ended within that year. But the thing that's messed up about that, like, yeah, she cheated on you when you were abroad at Vietnam, but you were doing hookers.
Yeah.
Your whole time there.
Yeah, exactly.
So you can't say shit.
No. And like, I bet you a ton of money that, like, because he was so caught up in these, like, sex workers, he probably didn't, like, even write her while he was there.
Oh, I guarantee it, yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and, you know, like, I'm not saying that was a good thing for her to cheat on him. I'm saying that he got mad at her, you know, and divorced her, but the dude was having Vietnam hookers in his room every night, you know, yeah. giving them gonorrhea.
Straight up.
It's messed up.
I'm actually kind of curious, because I know it said it ended within the year. Do you think he went back and possibly gave gonorrhea to his wife?
Oh my gosh.
Because that is an important thing to think about, you know?
I don't know. Maybe that's how she found out. She's like, where did I get this from?
You got some explaining to do.
Jeez. Anyways, so he goes on to his second wife after his first divorce. His second wife was named Marcia Winslow. And when he was finally put in jail, she came out and claimed that one time during intercourse, he put her in a chokehold. And she almost passed out because she was in a chokehold.
Jesus Christ. Yeah, you can't do stuff like that unless you consent.
And
you
she didn't
that.
Even know, like, she had never seen the side of him before.
Fuck that.
We put her in a chokehold during that. And this is the part where it gets really crazy. So during this time, he became super religious. Of course, we got to bring this
Ted
up.
Ted Bundy, dude.
Dude, it's all these people. Oh, the last episode, we were just talking about a reverend that beat someone with their family with an axe.
Okay, but like, let's pause just for a second. Just for a second. Because most like sociopaths and like serial killers have a lack of empathy, right? Like they can't feel shit. That's where I get curious with people like this, you know, Ridgway and Ted Bundy, because both of those serial killers feel like, or I feel like they had like this semi come to Jesus moment where they're like, you know what? I'm going to try to repent for my sins. But it never works.
No.
But it's interesting that they try to, like, get away from that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I see that. Like, you do something really bad, and you're like, okay, I need to fix my life.
Yeah.
I could see that. Okay. So, he did... So, maybe he's already started killing people at this point. We don't know.
True.
So, here's where it gets creepy, though, because he goes really overboard with this whole religious thing. He started proselytizing door-to-door on his own. He would read the Bible out loud, both at work and at home.
Jesus Christ.
So he's sitting there at his work desk reading the Bible out loud. He would insist that his wife follow the strict teachings of their pastor and the Bible. So, you know, submit. You know, it's all about that. It's all about submission to women.
Yeah.
Women to men, which is messed up. And Ridgway would also frequently cry after sermons or during reading the Bible at work. So, dude, if I was sitting next to this guy at work and he's, like, reading the Bible out loud and crying,
yeah,
I would think, like, okay, this guy's insane. Obviously, he has a mental illness.
Oh, for sure.
And two, he might be an active shooter one day.
Fuck. Like, dude, honestly, you're not wrong, though, because, like, okay, that's actually creepy to think about. Modern-day serial killers are really just active shooters.
That's true, yeah. Yeah, yeah, you're not wrong.
Like, dude. Okay, keep going.
Okay. So, despite his beliefs, Ridgway continued to solicit service of sex workers and wanted his wife to participate in sex in public and inappropriate places, sometimes even in areas where his victims' bodies were later discovered.
Okay, that's creepy.
Yeah.
That's really creepy.
So, he had pre-planned all this stuff out because he has these little special areas where he dumps bodies.
Okay, hold up. One question I do have. So this second wife, he obviously wanted to have sex in public, and like I know that's taboo. I don't think that's necessarily like serial killer. Like that's just part
that's
of the thrill.
A kink.
Yeah. But like the part that is creepy is that he wanted to have sex in the places where some of his victims were killed.
Yes.
So he was probably, if she would have agreed to that, he probably would have killed her there.
Yes.
You know?
I think so. Because a lot of these people, he actually did take them and put them in. A lot of the bodies were found in those locations.
That's creepy.
Yeah. So according to women in his life, Ridgway had an insatiable sexual appetite. His three ex-wives and several ex-girlfriends reported that he demanded sex from them several times a day. And where I read this from, it said like, you know, 10 to 20 times a day.
Jesus Christ.
No,
dude.
I'm serious.
No way.
Yes.
That's too much.
Yeah.
That's too
At
much.
That point, it's like, do you even have anything like any gas left in the tank? You know? Like 10 to 20 times. The guy was a sex addict for sure.
Dude. And like based on his second wife, he's putting him in chokeholds the entire time too.
Yeah. So he loves violence. He loves, you know, sex. He's got a total addiction to this, like an unhealthy addiction.
And like, that's the one thing that we do need to bring up is there is such thing as sex addiction. You know,
there is.
It's rare, but like,
yeah, yeah. And I'm not saying like, you know, everybody loves sex.
Yeah.
But to ask for it 10 to 20 times a day and force it 10 to 20 times per day,
yeah,
that's a little crazy.
No, it is way crazy.
Way crazy.
You know?
Yeah, for
a
sure.
A good night is two times.
Yeah, right? If you can even go.
Yeah, I know. It's like time. Most people get tired. Yeah. We don't have to go into it, but you know, this isn't realistic.
For sure. It's not realistic at all. And obviously his wives and girlfriends aren't going to go for it all that time. For
no,
sure.
Yeah.
So Ridgway admitted that he, hold on. Often he would want to have sex with them in public spaces or in the woods. He admitted to having a fixation with sex workers and with whom he would have a love-hate relationship with. He frequently complained about their presence in his neighborhood, like his dad did, and he also took advantage of their services regularly. So this guy is literally his dad, probably.
Dude, literally, yeah.
Like, he's complaining about sex workers, yet he solicits them all the time.
Yeah.
It's so dumb. It's like, it's the stupidest thing in the whole world. Some have speculated that Ridgway was torn between his lusts and his staunch religious beliefs. Yeah, no shit.
Yeah, definitely. Dude, fuck this guy.
So that's a little backstory on Gary Ridgway. A lot of that was taken from what his wives have said in the past and his girlfriend. So
yeah.
You literally have multiple women coming forward and giving all this backstory about it.
Do we know if there were any other physical aggressions during sexual intercourse aside from his second wife? Because she was the only one that said he would, like, choke her out.
Was just so taken back by it.
Okay.
That's why she reported it. I'm sure a lot of his other wives and girlfriends they knew that going into the relationship, probably. But his second wife, he had never done anything like that before, and then he just automatically, it's like a switch flipped on that turned him into a really aggressive person.
Damn. Okay. All right. That being said, we're going to hop into the murders. So throughout the 1980s and 1990s, Ridgway is believed to have murdered at least 71 teenage girls and women near Seattle and Tacoma, Washington. He later reported that he had killed so many that he lost count. A majority of the murders occurred between 1982 and 1984. The victims were believed to be either sex workers or runaways, whom he picked up along Pacific Highway South. Ridgway sometimes showed the woman a picture of his son to trick them into trusting him. They would engage in sexual activity, and after minutes of intercourse from behind, Ridgway would wrap his forearm around the front of their necks and use the other arm to pull back as tightly as he could, strangling them. He killed most victims in his home, his truck, or a secluded area. Most of their bodies were dumped in wooded areas around the Green River, Seattle-Tacoma International Airport, and other dump sites. The bodies were often left in clusters, sometimes posed, usually nude. He would sometimes return to the victims' bodies and have sexual intercourse with them. Ridgway later explained that he did not find necrophilia more sexually satisfying, but having sex with the deceased reduced his need to obtain a living victim, and thus limited his exposure to being caught, because most of the bodies were not discovered until only the skeletons remained. Three victims are still unidentified to this day. Ridgway occasionally contaminated the dump sites with gum, cigarettes, and written materials belonging to others, and even transported a few victims' remains across state lines into Oregon to confuse the police.
So the guy's obviously not that dumb.
No.
Like, yeah. He knows what he's doing.
Well, also touching on that, too, like, the IQ test that we always, like, you know, fantasize about, they're actually not that accurate. Like, yeah. We learned about that in education where, like, IQ tests literally mean nothing. It's more about, like, if you have a learning disability or not. Like, that's really what comes down to, like, general intelligence. But IQ tests are, like...
And, you know, IQ tests don't measure street smarts either.
No, yeah.
So, and this would be considering... This would be kind of like a street smart thing.
Definitely.
Can we go back and talk about how he would return to the victims' bodies
yes,
for sex?
Because definitely.
That's really, like, that's so unsettling.
Dude, I love that he said that, what, it reduced his, like, need to kill people because of it?
Yeah, I mean, that's good, because, you know, it could have saved lives, but still, it's really
Dude,
messed up.
That's the only positive in this story.
Yeah,
the
really,
only
though.
Positive.
It's like, oh, I just didn't feel like killing another girl, so I went to the one that's, you know, half decomposed.
That's so
got
gross.
It on. I know. Because literally decomposition starts within like 24 hours after a person's killed.
Right.
And I don't know if, have you ever like been to a cadaver lab or anything and touched a dead body?
No, I haven't.
Dude, the feeling is so weird.
Yeah.
Like I went to one and grabbed an arm and held it up of a cadaver.
Yeah.
It does not feel human in the slightest.
Yeesh.
Because your mind plays such a trick on you where when you grab somebody's arm, you expect, you know, to feel warmth. You expect to feel like a certain firmness or a softness. And when you grab a dead person's arm, or like this cadaver I one time touched, it's freezing cold.
Oof.
It's stiff.
Ugh.
It almost feels like a plastic mold that's been in the refrigerator.
That's gross.
Yeah, it's not a pleasant thing to touch in the slightest. So the fact that he's trying to have intercourse with this thing, I just can't even wrap my mind around that. And another person who's guilty about having intercourse with the dead is Ted Bundy also.
Did he do that too?
He did. And we'll talk about that when, because the authorities actually, to find the Green River Killer, they actually enlisted Ted Bundy to help them.
Did they really?
They went and they're like, hey, we need your help with this. And he actually gave them ideas on how to catch him.
Fuck.
Yeah, Ted Bundy helped catch the Green River Killer. But we'll talk about that in the investigation. But the fact that he's dumping gum and cigarettes and other written materials belonging to others, that's really smart.
Yeah, trying to confuse the police. Yeah. Also taking him across state lines, too.
Mm-hmm, you know? For sure. Also, another thing, one more quick thing before we get into the investigation. Sex workers in general. I don't think they were people who were missed by other people. Like, you have the majority of them are African-American sex workers. That kind of population subset does not, you know, it would be terrible to be in that situation. But yeah. If you have a black sex prostitute who goes missing, you're not going to bat an eye over it. And that's the sad thing. What the Seattle police never did was they never took these missing people seriously.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's still present today. Like, if you look at child kidnappings or, like, abductions, if it's a white kid, everyone in the news is freaking out. Like, literally, the parents will, like, rant and scream and call the police every single day until they find out where their kid's at. And, like, the whole media will make a big deal about it. But any minority, if their kid goes missing, it will not even pop up on the news. And if it does, it's only for a second and it's never talked about again.
Yeah.
Like, it's still something we see today. It's just a whole racial inequality when it comes to this stuff. Especially when it's dealing with females, you know? But.
Yep. It's really sad. It's really sad. And that's why, you know, that's probably why he got away with this for so long. He wasn't murdering wealthy white people. He was murdering black prostitutes.
Yeah.
Black women prostitutes.
I wonder if that was almost like something he purposely went for because he knew he wouldn't get caught as much and people wouldn't investigate, you know?
Possibly. Yeah, I think so. Probably. So now just diving into the investigation, started in the early 1980s, the King County Sheriff's Office formed the task force known as the Green River Task Force. And this had the sole goal of catching what they now called the Green River Killer and solving the murders that were taking place. The task force members included Robert Keppel and David Reichert, who periodically interviewed, an incarcerated serial killer, Ted Bundy. In 1984, Ted Bundy offered his opinions on the psychology, motivations, and behavior of the killer. He suggested that the killer was revisiting the dump sites to have sex with the victims. And that turned out to be true, like we were talking about.
Yeah.
And if police found a fresh grave, they should stake it out and wait for him to come back. Because that is how they caught Ted Bundy. They caught him coming because they found out he was involved in necrophilia.
Yeah.
They would do a stakeout at a body they found. And I think what had happened was they found a fresh body after about 4 days, and he came back on the sixth day.
Ooh.
I mean, a body 6 days in, that's just disgusting. Left out in the woods. I mean, there are bugs crawling around all over inside of it.
Yep.
And it's just so disgusting. I can't even think about it, really.
Yeah, no, definitely.
Like, and so Ted Bundy offered his insight, and he's like, yeah, he's going back to the victims and having sex. So he was finally arrested in 1982, and... He was arrested on charges related to prostitution for soliciting a prostitute. He became a suspect of the Green River killings in 1983, and in 1984, Ridgway passed a polygraph test when he was being interrogated.
Jeez.
So that just goes to show polygraph tests are not 100%.
Yeah.
April 7th, 1987, police took the hair and saliva samples from Ridgway. So literally from 1982... from when he was first charged with prostitution to 1983, when they suspected him of being the Green River Killer, he goes off for another, 4 or 5 years until 1987, when they took hair and saliva and they finally can convict him.
Yeah.
With evidence.
Okay. So something I just want to touch on real quick, like kind of go into that polygraph test. With that, like, I mean, we can talk about split personalities, right? So if you go through enough trauma, abuse, or if you have such a bad like lifestyle in the current, you can often split your personality and you'll literally become two different people. And what happens is you like dream of this wonderland, and like part of your identity is going to go into that, and that's where you get the split personality. So I'm wondering if the reason that some of these people don't pass or can pass the polygraph test is because he literally has a split personality where his serial killer self or his true self is literally being covered up with this fake identity that he is using to cope with all the stuff he's doing that's horrible, you know?
For sure.
Because, I mean, those split personalities are believable.
They are.
Like, once you're in that split personality, you are that person. And he probably could firmly say, yeah, I didn't kill that person, because he's not Ridgway at that point in time.
It's true. Yeah, definitely. I think that, especially with different types of mental disorders and stuff, that you could pass a polygraph test because you're that certain that you didn't do it.
Yeah, which is creepy.
So the samples collected in 1987 were later subjected to DNA analysis, and this provided evidence for his arrest warrant. And on November 30th, 2001, Ridgway... Oh, so this guy wasn't even arrested until 2001.
Nice. That's a long time for him
20 years.
To go.
Yep, he's 20 years, and he finally gets arrested.
Ugh.
Great job. Ridgway was working at the Kenworth Truck Factory, where he was a spray painter. Police arrived, they arrested him, and Ridgway was arrested on the suspicion of murdering four women nearly 20 years after his first killing, and the first woman being identified. When DNA evidence conclusively linked semen left in the victims to a saliva swab taken by the police, the four victims named in the original indictment were Marcia Chapman, Opal Mills, Cynthia Hins, and Carol Ann Christensen. They were added to the indictment after a forensic scientist identified microscopic spray paint spheres as a specific brand and composition of paint used at the Kenworth factory during the specific time frame when these victims were killed. So that's pretty crazy. That's good police work.
Yeah.
That in itself was the fact that they found spray paint particles on the victims.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Definitely.
The fact that it took them 20 years to do it, not cool.
Yeah, but finding it cool. Respect.
But, and like I said earlier, the reason why I think this guy got away with murdering so many women is because of the type of women they were. Prostitutes, yeah. You know, they're undesirables, and they're African-American, which is terrible and sad that they don't care about that population group. But the fact that they're also prostitutes and stuff,
yeah,
the police are not, you know, they are not going to be working their butts off to solve this very hard.
Definitely.
It's only until the body count started getting in like the 40s and 50s. They're like, shit, we better do something about this.
Can't let this guy keep going.
Seriously.
No, that's a good point. All right, hopping into the trial. So in early August 2003, news reported that Ridgway had been moved from a maximum security cell at King County Jail to a minimum medium security level tank. Other news reported stated that his lawyers were closing a plea bargain that would spare him the death penalty in return for his confession to a number of the Green River murders. On November 5th, 2003, Ridgway entered a guilty plea to 48 charges of aggravated first-degree murder as part of a plea bargain. That would spare him execution in exchange for his cooperation in locating the remains of his victims and providing other details. In his statement accompanying his guilty plea, Ridgway explained that he had killed all of his victims inside King County, Washington, and that he had transported and dumped the remains of two women near Portland to confuse the police. On December 18, 2003, King County Superior Court Judge Richard Jones sentenced Ridgway to 48 life sentences with no possibility of parole and one life sentence to be served consecutively. He was also sentenced to an additional 10 years for tampering with evidence for each of the 48 victims, adding 480 years to his 48 life sentences. Dude, that's like too much.
Yeah, like, why? I don't understand why we do this stupid stuff. Like, convict him for life in jail, or convict him to the death penalty and just be done with it.
Right.
Like, you're adding, like, okay, you've already given him 48 life sentences. Oh, now we're going to add 480 years because he messed with evidence.
Yeah.
Like, just put the guy's ass in jail and stop going off this whole
thing. Dude, exactly. The only reason that this could be semi-plausible is if we believed in reincarnation and it was, like, a nationwide thing. Like, because no one's going to come back and serve these sentences for him.
Yeah, but even if you were reincarnated, you'd be reincarnated into a fresh body that's out of jail. Like,
that's true.
I don't know, dude. It's just, just hate it when stupid courts are like, oh, 48 more years for this and, you know, 20 for this. Like, the dude's... He's going to be in jail his whole life. Why do you keep on adding and adding and adding? Yeah. Like, the guy's not going to live forever. Just say life in jail, bang the gavel, Court adjourned.
So here's where I'm curious
about. No parole.
What do you feel about this? Like, do you think life in prison with like no enjoyment whatsoever, so the person gets even crazier before they die? Do you think that's the way to do it? And by the way, we're using like taxes from everyone in the country to literally pay to keep them alive in prison. Or do we just kill them?
So we can talk about this because we all, it's in here. My personal thought on it is I would rather have the death penalty.
Okay.
And I'll tell you why. So we did research on people on death row, and it turns out death row life is pretty freaking good.
Okay.
Like, you get really good meals. You get a very large cell. I mean, you live like a king on death row. There was a guy in prison who hated living in general population so much that, and he hated solitary confinement so much, because if you're a bad inmate, a lot of the times the prison guards and stuff will just put you in solitary confinement, which is one of the worst punishments you can undergo.
Jeez, okay.
Being in solitary confinement, because you're literally, you have no interaction, you don't leave your cell, you get to leave your cell for like 10 minutes to go out into a courtyard with nobody else around you. It really messes with your mind.
Yeah.
And you will go insane.
Yeah.
In solitary confinement. And it shouldn't be even a practice in today's time. Honestly, it shouldn't. A lot of countries in Europe have banned solitary confinement because it's so detrimental to someone mentally.
Right.
And it can't be undone.
Especially when these guys are already mentally unstable. Mm-hmm. Like, we're just going to make them worse, you know?
Yes.
Like,
and if they're going to be life in jail, then I don't see that it matters. But I personally, so going back to the guy I was talking to, the guy hated being in solitary so much, he killed an inmate just so that he could be put on death row.
Okay.
Because he wanted to not be in solitary anymore.
Damn.
Because he's like, he literally said, well, I can be on death row for the next 15 years. Just keep appealing my case. Ugh. And I can live on death row for 15 years and live like a king.
Dude, I hate that.
Yes. I hate that terrible. So much. It's a very big injustice. So, and with Ridgway, so Ridgway confessed to 48 murders, and those murders are actually confirmed to be by the Green River Killer.
Okay.
So, he entered into a plea deal, and I think we talk about it a little bit later, but basically he entered a plea deal to help find 6 other bodies in order to not be put on death row.
Jeez.
So they were originally going to execute the guy.
Yeah.
And they said, and he said, and his lawyers, Ridgway's lawyers said, if we help you find the other 6 bodies, can we just have life in prison? And they agreed.
Damn. Okay. Huh. Where did I stop? Sorry.
Right where I'm at.
Ridgway?
Hold on. I think I just said that though. So go.
Begin.
Yeah, whenever. Wherever you think. Even down at the last paragraph, I think that'd be okay.
Okay.
Oh, wait, actually, no. Talk about, let's go start right here again. Just, that's fine.
Okay. Ridgway confessed to more confirmed murders than any other American serial killer. Over a period of over 5 months, the police and prosecutor interviews, he confessed to 48 murders, 42 of which were on the police list of probable Green River Killer victims. On February 9th, 2004, county prosecutors began to release the videotape records of Ridgway's confessions. In one taped interview, he initially told investigators that he was responsible for the deaths of 65 women. In another tape interview with Richard on December 31st, 2003, Ridgway claimed to have murdered 71 victims and confessed to having had sex with them before killing them, a detail which he did not reveal until after his sentencing. In his confession, he acknowledged that he had targeted prostitutes because they were easy to pick up and that he hated most of them. He confessed that he had sex with his victims' bodies after he murdered them, but claimed he had begun burying the later victims so that he could resist the urge to commit necrophilia. Ridgway later said that murdering young women was his career. Dude, I hate that. I hate that so much.
He's a terrible person. He's a piece of shit. But I don't believe the whole 65, 71 victims. You know, he just keeps inflating it every time. Especially the fact that he's like, well, yeah, I had sex with them all before I killed them too.
Yeah.
Because that's kind of an ego inflation.
Yeah.
I think. And that's common too with serial killers when they confess is police actually have the bodies of 49 women that he knew the names of and knew, like, you know, he could describe who they were and stuff. So I believe that he did kill 49 people, 48 to 49. I do not believe that he killed 65 to 71.
Okay.
Because I think that's a common thing where serial killers are like, well, I'm already in jail for life. I might as well, you know, rake up the body count because that will make me more famous.
Yeah.
That's common.
Yeah.
So I think the whole 65, 71 claim is false. I mean, it could be high as 60s, but we actually have the bodies of 48 people.
Right.
49.
Which is already ridiculously high. You
extremely
know?
High.
That's insane. Yeah.
And you know, the only reason he got away with it is because of the type of people he was murdering, I think.
Yeah.
I really do believe that.
I mean, it's a shame that this didn't happen in our time period because he definitely would have gotten caught. And this wouldn't have been something that was like so overlooked, you know? But it's just, it's sad to think about, you know? This guy is crazy ridiculous when it comes to the amount of people he killed. Like,
for sure.
And like the whole reason it began, like, I wonder if we went back in time. And his mother, like, one, wasn't abused or knew how to correctly parent and didn't touch him after he was wetting the bed. I wonder if that would have helped. And also if his father didn't talk about prostitutes as much. I wonder if just those two things were fixed in his childhood, if this would have been the same story.
I think so. I think that it would have been a different outcome. I do.
Okay.
I think that if he was raised better, he wouldn't have had such... The guy already had a mental illness.
Yeah.
And I think that his parents doing what they did... made that even worse.
Definitely. Yep. I guess final thoughts. You got any?
No. Okay. The guy's a bad guy.
Yeah, I agree. I don't have any other comments. I think that's good. So, all right. Thank you for listening to the Dark Things podcast. This is season 3, episode 8, The Green River Killer, or also known as Gary Ridgway. Per the usual, if you guys want to leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, if that's how you listen to us, please do so. Also, make sure you check us out on the other platforms of your choice. Make sure you share it with your friends. And if you would like to, follow us on all our social media accounts, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, where we regularly post the episodes that are currently coming out and interacting with you guys as our fans. Stay tuned in the future for new updates. We'll be working on Patreon and merch, so make sure that you're looking out for that and helping support the show. Thank you so much, and see you guys next time. Hey, hey.